kind of early in the afternoon, we saw what looked like a cloud coming up, you know, but oh, it was so dark and all, and so ominous looking. And we didn't know whether to start out to go back to our districts or not. And finally, the thing reached us, and we lived about 15 miles or a little more west of Woodward here. And it was just, it was dark, you know, it wasn't like night, but kind of like after sundown. Mm-hmm. And anyway, the chickens thought it was time to go to the chicken house, and they were all going in and getting up on the roost, you know, and and we finally decided that it would be all right, so we went on. But now I don't know just when that was, but that was the first storm that we had.
And where were you?
Out at home.
Right.
Out at home, about 15 miles west of town here is where I grew up. And, well, I was in the fifth grade when we moved out there. And but that still, you know, I remember more of those years than I remembered the years from when I was born and little up to that time. I remember a little of that. We lived south of Woodward, where I was born, and but we went on to school to our districts that afternoon, that evening. But I don't know. I don't know whether it was the year I taught down at Sharon or whether it was the year I taught out at Keenan. I just don't remember, but I know that was the first one, and it was somewhere along about 30. Well, it would have to be, I guess, 29 and 30, somewhere along there. But now, the rest of the Dust Bowl experience, I can't remember that it was any different than just any other time, only that it was dirtier.
Yeah. We're in Woodward, Oklahoma. Today is May the 23rd of 2001. It's about 12:30 in the afternoon, and I'll just start. I'll ask you to state your name, your full name, maiden name, married name, all of that. And when you were born and where you were born.
My name is Lola Desi Hurd Lehman.
And when were you born?
I was born June the 5th, 1909. About 10 miles south of Woodward. On my father had homesteaded this farm down there, and so I was born on the homestead, and we lived there until I was in the fifth grade, and then we moved out to Tangier, and I finished school there through high school. We had a high school there at that time, and that was the main reason that we moved from south of Woodward to west of Woodward, is so that we would be in a district that had a high school.
Mm-hmm. How many people went to your high school? How many people were in your class?
I believe there were about 27 or 8 students in high school. And in my graduating class, there were 4 girls, yeah. No boys.
An all-girl class.
But some of the classes only... some of the early classes, there was only one student to graduate or 2 students to graduate. And I expect 7 or 8 students to graduate at one time was the most that ever graduated at one time out there.
Four was still a pretty big class size. Well, one of the things we start with when we do this is just, you know, very basic, very simple, to describe the house where you grew up. Just what was it like? How many rooms did it have?
Well, when we lived south of Woodward, my father built us a house. It had four rooms and an upstairs. But when we moved west to the farm that is west was west of Woodward, the house wasn't very big. There was a kitchen dining room and a living room and two very small bedrooms. And we lived in that small house for about 5 years or maybe more, maybe another year or two. I can't just remember, but I was, I believe I was 17. I believe I was 17 years old when Papa built on to this house and built us a nice big living room and two bedrooms and a bathroom and, you know, got it made into a more livable house. And what else did you want to know?
Just what it looked like. How many people were living in this house?
Five. Papa and Mama and me and my two sisters.
And you just had two sisters?
I just have two sisters. Yeah. No brothers.
What were their sisters' names?
Lottie and Leone.
And where did you fit in that?
I was the oldest
the
one.
The oldest one.
Okay. Mm-hmm. By a lot? Or were you guys close in age?
Oh yes, we were close. There's less than 4 years difference in my age and Leone's age.
Wow.
By the way, Leone spells her name L-E-O-N-E.
Okay.
And not an A. Leone. Mm-hmm. And what else do you want to know?
Anything you want to tell me. So would you consider the house to be in a rural area?
Yes.
Okay, so your dad, was he a farmer?
Uh-huh.
What did your mom do?
She was a stay-at-home mom.
Yeah.
She just took care of the home and managed it. And
which is probably a job and a half.
Oh, yeah.
Well, with, you would think with three girls that she would have plenty of help. But since we didn't have any brothers, I had to be the boy. So I was the one that went with Papa to the field to work, to whatever it was that we were doing, you know. I could handle a team of four horses hitched to a disc or a larger piece of equipment, and everything was done with horses. We didn't have tractors then. And I'd either be on a knife sled or a disc or something else while Papa would be maybe planting or doing some other work in the field. And we always had a big garden, and so in between times we had to go and weed the garden. And that was a job none of us liked to do, I guess, but we did it anyway.
Did you like driving the team of horses? Was that fun, or did you think, oh man, I have to go out there again?
No, I didn't mind doing that, but then I'm a person that doesn't mind working. I don't mind doing things, and even now I still work part time.
Wow.
But I don't, my part-time work now isn't very hard to do. I sit here in my rocking chair and I crochet lace, or I crochet an afghan, or I work on a quilt, or I do things like that for people.
Keep yourself busy, don't you?
And I keep myself busy and keep my hands busy and keep my mind off of how I feel.
I want to ask you a couple more questions about your dad. Whenever you were, did you raise mostly crops or cattle or both?
Both. But mostly more like a dairy farm.
Okay.
And then we raised feed crops, mm-hmm, for the cattle and the horses. I don't know. We didn't have a whole lot. We were not a very wealthy family at all, but how we managed to get through school, I'll never know. But we did, all three of us. have degrees, and Lottie and I got our masters, but Leon decided by the time... Well, Leon was the one that married, and I didn't marry till I was past 30, and Lottie was about that age when she married, and she and I didn't either one have any children. Now, Leon has three children, and she had about 60 hours of college work when she married, and she decided that she wasn't ever going to do anything that required any more education, so she was just a stay-at-home mom and took care of her kids and helped with their... They were big wheat farmers, but their cattle production was beef. And then she decided, when the little boy, the youngest one of her family, was 6 years old, well, she'd go back to teaching. So then she had to go back to college and finish up her work. But we'd go to school a while, and then we'd stop and teach a year or two and then go back to school, and it took me 6 years to get a degree. But
that was pretty common at that time, wasn't it?
Well, there were lots of students that had to stop and work, or that had jobs there in Stillwater or something, but a whole lot of them just went straight through. But the point was that that a whole lot of people who should have gotten to go to college couldn't go and didn't go.
Mm-hmm.
They just didn't have money enough to go. And maybe they didn't want an education bad enough to work and go to school and work and go to school.
Right.
You know.
You went to Oklahoma State, right?
Mm-hmm.
What year did you go there?
Well, when I got out of high school, back in those days, we couldn't go very far from home. And I had never been very far. I was a 4-H club member, and so I got to go to Stillwater two or three summers to 4-H camp, or whatever they called it. And I went to Oklahoma City two or three times to the state fair. And I won a trip to Chicago to the 4-H national
something like their convention.
We didn't call it a convention. I can't just think of the word right now, but it was an annual affair, and it was kind of the crowning activity for 4-H members. And so when I got out of high school, well, Mama didn't want me to go very far from home, so I went up to Alva and went one year up there, my freshman year. And the last year that I was in 4-H, I won a $150 scholarship. That was a lot of money now. Lots of scholarships are $2,500 and $5,000 now. The scholarships from our funds is supposed to be $600, but I'm not right sure. It's been $500 for quite a while, but I told them last year that we could raise it. After interest went down, I thought, well, maybe we shouldn't have done that. But still, this year, I think... approximately 18 scholarships were given, whether they were $500 or $600.
Wow.
I don't know.
That's wonderful. That must make you feel really good.
Oh, I do. And the letters I get from the kids are just wonderful. Some of them they always write me a thank you letter for the scholarship. Some of them don't say very much, you know. They just thank me for the scholarship funds, and that they appreciate what I've provided and so on. And then some of them will tell me something about their situation. One girl wrote and told me that her mother and her brother, I believe it was, in school the same time she was, and how much the scholarship helped. And I think at that time it might not have been but $300. And one girl wrote and said that she had had to drop out of school and work a year, and with the scholarship, she was going to be able to get her degree.
Oh, that's great.
And I got two real good letters this year from a couple of the girls that got scholarships. But that's just real, real interesting, and I appreciate the girls. And a few boys also, because now we're kind of spread out in the College of Education and Human Environmental Science. And then we have a general scholarship that includes pre-med and agriculture, College of Agriculture, and the College of Business Administration. So there are some young men who get scholarships in there. But
how did you use your scholarship when you went to school?
Well, I just used it to pay for... Now, you know, we didn't have to pay $75 an hour or whatever they're paying now. We had a few little laboratory fees, like $2.50 for a foods laboratory. And... maybe $2 or $3 for chemistry. I can't just remember, but that was about it. And then our books didn't cost a whole lot, $3 or $4 or $5 a book.
Oh my gosh. That'd be nice.
And now I understand that they begin at about $75 and go up.
Some of them are, yeah, incredibly expensive.
Mm-hmm. And that's one thing I want to talk to you about.
Okay.
After a while.
So did that $150 cover your first year at
almost?
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Lottie was ready to go to college her first year that year, and so I had the $150 to start, and then Papa and Mama had a real good year, and this was in 1928 before the banks all closed and everything. And I think that probably they sent us about $250. That made us $400. But we had a little efficiency apartment, you know, where we did our own meals. And again, we took some food from home, and we just got through in real good shape. And the next year, then, we dropped out and taught school 2 years. And then by that time, Leon was ready to go to college. So that was the year that all three of us were there.
Wow. And all three of you were in Stillwater then?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
My degree is from Stillwater, and Lottie, both of her degrees are from Stillwater. My master's is from the University of Arkansas. And Leon then had about, as I said, about 60 hours at Stillwater. But then she finished her degree up at Alva College up there.
When you went to teach for 2 years, where did you teach?
Oh, you'll never believe it. Woodward County, goes down quite a ways south of here and comes across. And I was right in the southwest corner of the county, that school district that's right down there. And it was back then, it was pretty well back in the boondocks, as they call it. And Lottie had the next district east of mine when we were right on the south county line. And I was on the west county line and south, right in the corner down there. And Lottie taught her 2 years at the same school, but I moved second year to another school. Really, I had an average daily attendance of 4 students that year. And I don't remember what they did. It kind of seems to me that they decided to pay tuition and send the few children to a neighboring district. Anyway, I moved back up this way a little ways, And I taught at, I don't remember, I always refer to it as Keenan. There was a post office there at that time, Keenan, Oklahoma. But that's all that was there. And then about half a mile west of the post office was the school, little school building. And I think that little building is still there.
Wow.
It's about the only little school building, country school building, I guess it's left. And here a few years ago, they kind of wanted to bring it up here and arrange it along with our museum here in Woodward and fix it up like it was back when they... when we had school down there, but I had an average daily attendance there of 14, I believe. And
was that from first grade through 12th grade?
Or no, first grade through 8th.
8th grade, okay.
So what was it like teaching there?
Well, I didn't know that it wasn't any different than teaching anywhere else. Because that was my first year to teach. Yeah. Well, it was the second year teaching at Keenan, but... I don't know. We just had a good time, and we would, on real cold days, the kids would bring some things from home, like extra milk or whatever we needed, and we'd fix a kettle of soup on the stove, and they'd bring their regular lunch, but then they'd bring their tin cups and a spoon, so that they could have a cup of hot soup. And we worked real hard to improve the building and the school and all. And we did get I don't remember what we called it now, kind of a credit for the improvements that we did, that we made. I enjoyed teaching down there, even though there was a grade or two I didn't have. I didn't have a primary student, a little one, you know, just 6 years old and starting. I didn't have one. I believe third grade was the first grade, and then I had third and fourth, fifth, sixth, and... maybe I had one in the seventh grade. Seemed like there were three eighth grade students. But most of them, there were just one or two in each class, you know. So, but to get all the different subjects in, I had to double up sometimes, like have... say fifth and sixth grade spelling at the same time,
yeah.
And give one word to the fifth grade student and a word to the sixth, and back and forth until we would have our words for the day. And
do you remember what your salary was when you were teaching there?
$90 a month.
Yeah, was that pretty good for that time?
Oh, yes, for teaching out in the country school, that was good money. Lottie got $85 at the school just east of me. and the first year that I taught with only the four children, I got $90 a month. I got $90 a month those 2 years. And I saved a whole lot of it, thank goodness, because when the three of us went, Lottie had saved a lot of her money, too. And we had that to go to school on. And the three of us went the full term. And then I went that summer and finished up and got my degree at the end of summer session.
Wow, you must have worked really hard.
I did. I carried 18 hours. every year I carried 18 hours.
Well, you knew how hard it was to get there. You were going to make full advantage of it.
I did, and I knew just exactly how much it was costing me and who paid for most of it. And I didn't intend to waste any of it.
That's right.
So I didn't make good grades. It wasn't very hard to make the dean's list. I believe that's what we called it at that time, but I think they have some other categories now. Yes, I worked pretty hard. I carried 9 hours that summer that I graduated.
That's a heavy load for summer.
That is.
What?
That's a heavy load for summer school.
Yes, it is.
Well, so when the Depression hit, what in your life changed? What made you realize that times were different and it was harder now?
Well, when Mama wrote and told me that Papa had been hearing talk here in Woodward, and he would come once each week, you know, to town and do all the things that he needed to do and visit and all. And Papa had heard them talking about that the banks were going to close and things like that. And they wondered if what Lottie and I thought about taking our bank accounts, what we had in the bank that we were using right then to go to school on, to take it out of the bank. And so we wrote back and said, well, maybe we'd better. So they checked it out. Is this thing operating?
Yeah,
I'm not say this then.
Oh, now, what you say, I shouldn't have told you.
Well, anyway, turn it off and you'll tell us.
Yeah. Anyway, they took the money out of the bank and kept it at home. And and they would send us $20 at a time whenever we needed it. Well, just when we enrolled and had to get our books and supplies and things, that's when we needed the most money.
Right.
And so they would send us money. And so Mama was so worried because she thought Leon wasn't going to get to go to school. And I said, well, Mama, don't worry about it. Lottie and I are going, and we'll just take her along with us, and we'll just get a little apartment, and it won't cost any more for her to be there than not to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's going to cost me and Lottie anyway. And so we went on, and at the time that we went, it didn't seem so hard, but when the bank closed, and we realized that if our money had been in there, we would have had to gone home.
Right.
We couldn't have stayed in Stillwater and even finished up that semester. And we would have lost about half a semester's work and everything. And that's the thing that I remember the most about being so hard. Then after, here I graduated at the end of the summer school, and Lottie had completed well, a little more than 2 years of work. She might have had about 2, 4, 5 semesters of work, maybe. And Leon then had 1 year's work. And we could not find a job anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We were at home, out there on the farm. And back to scratch, you might say, because we really had to live at home. And so then the next year, we did find schools to teach. I taught at Sharon in the high school there. I taught home economics and science. And then Lottie and Leon, we still had our little country schools out in the country, and they taught in a couple of those little schools, and so things went along very well after that. But that really made you know that it was hard. Of course, I still got $90 teaching in high school. Lottie and Leon taught for $50 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Then, when they had been paying $85 and $90 out.
Yeah.
So that was quite a demotion.
Well, they were probably glad just to have jobs.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. It was just great to have work. And they taught then for, about 5 years, I guess. And I taught. Then that 1 year that I taught down at Sharon after I got my degree, well, again, I wasn't very extravagant with my money.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided that I wanted to go back to school and work on my master's, and I wanted to go to Ames, Iowa, to Iowa State. And I did go up there. And while I was up there, then I got an offer from Arkansas Extension Service, you know, to work as a home demonstration agent, we were called in those days, to work for my master's degree or to come and take the job. And she wrote back and told me, well, to stay. But it wasn't very long till I got a letter from them, and they told me that if I wanted to come and take a position with them, that they wanted me to come now. So then I checked out. I was running out of money, and I checked out and went down there and went to work and worked 37 years. And I really enjoyed that. But that was the thing that I wanted to do. I didn't want to be a school teacher, a classroom teacher. I always wanted to do extension work, and I thoroughly enjoyed.
So what did your job consist of? What did you do? As your position?
In extension, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, we were called home demonstration agents at that time, and we worked with groups of women, you know, showing. Well, in Arkansas, I was the first agent in one of the counties that I worked in. And the other county, the agent was this kind of on paper. I mean, you know, she was supposed to work in the county, but she had two counties. And so she just came up into this county once or twice. So you might say I worked, the two counties had never had an agent.
So what counties did you work
in? I worked in Sharp County and Clay County. And Where Mountain Home is the county seat. What is that, Baxter County?
I'm not sure. That kind of sounds right, though.
I believe that's what it was. When I went, they gave me both Baxter and Sharp, and I worked 2 weeks in each county, and I went there the 1st of May, and I organized clubs of the women, you know, and we would meet, and some of the women had never seen a pressure cooker to do any kind of canning or anything. And but they knew about them, but and they kind of thought they were dangerous and that they might explode. And I remember going to one club meeting, and so I told them, I said, now I'm going to let this pressure go high enough that it will pop off. And one lady got up and took her two little children and went outside. I didn't say
you were going to blow the place up. She didn't want to be there.
She didn't want to be there. But I thought, well, now that's all right. She's concerned about herself and those two children, and I don't blame her a bit.
Sure.
And so it did, you know, and they all could see how that it wasn't as dangerous as it sounded. But still, I didn't want them to get too brave because it could be dangerous.
Sure.
We worked on canning and another government program. You know, that was right in the Depression yet. And we were just barely kind of starting to creep out. They had what they called canning kitchens, and they either used a house that was not being lived in, or they built a little one-room building, only it was pretty good size, and they had big retorts there and equipment to work with, and the women could bring their vegetables and fruits to these kitchens and can the food and then have it then for winter use. And so they were learning to can, and of course they had no ideas much at all about nutrition. I mean, as far as what the different food was contained and how they nourished the body and so on. And so we had that. Well, then, of course, they were interested in learning how to sew. Most of them made a lot of their clothes. They didn't buy much already made things. Right. And so we did some work in clothing and some work in improving kitchens and making them a little more convenient. And teaching them how to do their work a little more efficiently. For example, if you were going to clean the cabinet, start at the top shelf and come down. Don't start at the bottom shelf and go up.
Yeah.
But now you'd be surprised at how many people, women, would do
the opposite.
Yeah. The opposite. They'd start on the first floor and go up. Yeah. Oh, we worked with things like that. Then we had our 4-H clubs. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they worked on the same kinds of things. The little girls learned to follow a recipe and make cookies or cornbread or biscuits or mashed potatoes or whatever. And the little boys, because I don't know very much about their work because the county agent took care of the boys' program, but they would have their pig to take care of, or a calf, or a plot of cotton or corn or whatever, and I enjoyed it. And over the 37 years, I got pretty good results, I thought. Mm-hmm. I had a number of girls to make the Chicago trip that I had made.
Uh-huh.
I believe it was the third year that they had held this national convention for 4-H'ers when I went. And then I can't remember how many girls, but there were several of them. I just, one year I had two to go the same year.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And that was really good, because they tried to spread it around a little bit. They, not that they didn't let the one that had a real good record go, and maybe take one that hadn't done quite as much work. I think they were honest in their selections. But but Clay County had somebody every little few years, you know. Sometimes it'd be 2-3 years between times, but not then. Sometimes it would be one every year for 2-3 years.
Well, now, when you were over in Arkansas, did you make trips back over to this area to see your parents and sisters very often?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
And what did you think about the difference between how things were and where you were in Arkansas and coming back over here? Did it seem like there was a noticeable difference in the conditions?
There is a there. Yes, I could detect a noticeable difference, but let's not discuss that.
Okay. Well, let's talk about something then on the other direction, very positive.
Okay.
It's very clear you're working very hard and you're doing so many different things, but I can't believe you if you tell me you never did anything for fun. So what kind of things did you do for fun and entertainment?
Well,
and did you ever have any time for yourself? That sounds like a an incredible
time. Really, really. I never have been a person for much recreation.
Mm-hmm.
There's just always been too much that I wanted to do. And as a kid, we would go on picnics, and I always had a pony to ride.
What was your pony's name?
Dobbin.
Dobbin.
And I like to go horseback riding. Uh-huh. And Papa got us a saddle. Lottie and Leon didn't ride as much as I did. I did most of the riding. And I like to ride. My 4-H club work was sort of recreational to me, you know, like going on the different right. trips and things like that was recreational. And in the summertime, a lot of times, Papa would go by the ice plant here in Woodward and get a 25-pound chunk of ice and bring it home, and we had an ice cream freezer. So we'd invite some of the neighbors to come, and we'd have an ice cream supper and visit, and us kids would play games of one kind and another.
Games you played when all the neighbor kids were over?
Oh, we would throw the ball over the house, you know, and catch it and run around the house and so on. Or we'd play Lose Your Supper.
How do you play that?
Lose Your Supper?
Oh, you form a ring. And then two, we always, two that would go around the outside of the circle, and then they would touch the hands that, in the circle, like they were holding hands all the way around. So they touched the hands of two, then the point was to one go one way and the other goes the other way and see who could get back to this place first.
Oh, okay.
Well, if you could get back first, well, fine. You could rest a little while. If the one that you had touched beat you back, then you had to do the whole thing over again and try to find another couple that you could beat around the circle. I don't know. But just little games like that we played and...
Did you ever lose your supper for like that game?
Oh, yes. Yes, I did. Lots of times I couldn't run as fast as whoever it was that we had selected to race around against. But it was fun, and it was good exercise for us.
When did you get married?
I married June the 30th, 1940. And I married a young man. He was in the funeral home business. And we built us a home in the town. And so after I married, then I didn't consider moving to a different county, you know. So we built us a little home, and we didn't have any children. I was past 30, and so was he. There was just four months difference in our ages.
Uh-huh.
He was 4 months older than I was.
I was going to ask you if he was older or younger.
His birthday was the 8th of February, and mine was the 5th of July, June. And so that's the difference in our ages.
Mm-hmm. And was he a native of that area?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And so we lived there. When we married, the European situation was very unstable. Mm-hmm. And already they were talking more, you know. And before our first anniversary, he was gone. And he was gone 4 years.
Wow.
And didn't come back home. When you first went in, you know, he was only in the United States, it seemed to me like maybe 5 months or something like that. It wasn't very long, mm-hmm. because they put him in the quartermaster corps, mm-hmm. and he was sent to Iran.
Wow.
Well, there was a railroad, and they built a highway up through Iran or Iraq, or maybe partly in both of them. The point was to transport supplies up on the back side of Germany, you see, into Russia to support the Russian army. And Clifford said that that the Russians didn't leave any space unfilled. If they were receiving trucks to use, when they didn't take them empty, they filled them. And to take them up there, they made every minute count, because at that time St. Petersburg was under siege, and they couldn't get anything in or out, and the rest of the country was nearly as bad, and they just were needing lots of help, and they made every minute count. And he was there on that supply line, I guess you'd call it, and the full time of the war. But he said at times the German forces were so strong coming down through southeastern Europe and like through Turkey and all, that they just didn't know whether they were going to break through, and they'd be having to do something besides work on that supply line. It was pretty hairy at times,
so
I guess.
So did he spend the entire time abroad in that area?
I think after he had been there about 2 years, then he got a furlough of 30 days, and he decided to come over into Israel, or where Israel is now, and visit the Holy Land.
Oh, wow.
So he got to do that. And then one time he said they got leave and went up on the Caspian Sea. And he enjoyed swimming and being up there a while. But otherwise, he was just there working. And I knew when they left the United States, but I didn't get a letter for 7 months.
Wow.
I didn't know.
That must have been really hard.
Well, it was. I felt like that everything was all right. But when he got back, he said, well, they boarded their ship, and now I don't remember just where, whether... Does Newport News have a harbor?
Yes, that's where there's a big naval operation.
There. Okay. Right. I believe that's where they left from. And he said they sailed down the east coast and across to South America. They touched where Brazil, you know, comes out there, some port along there.
Wow.
They touched. Then when they started, the next one was diagonal across to the tip of Africa down there.
To avoid all the Germans.
Right. But he said they just never did know when they were going to meet a torpedo, you know.
Yeah.
But they made it around and then back up the east side of Africa to the port. And I should know that because they're still there today.
And they go up to Istanbul, up through the Mediterranean, the Bosphorus,
around.
They went all the way around
Africa.
Through the Suez.
Through the Indian Ocean.
Okay.
You know, just around Africa and up, back up to Iran.
Okay.
But I don't know whether it was Aden or what seaport there that, I just can't remember. I hadn't recalled that so much. But anyway, back to getting married. Then he was gone that 4 years.
Uh-huh.
Well, then when he came back, it took us a year or two to get kind of squared away again. And by that time, we were getting to be about 40 years old. And we just decided not to have any children. So we didn't have any. And then he died at age 70. And
from, so did you live in Arkansas that entire time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lived in the same town where he had lived all his life. He was, like they say, he was born and reared and buried there.
Now, had his father been in the funeral business too?
No, I don't know. He just, the man that really owned the business, they had known each other for a long time. And Mr. Russell needed some help. And this was in the Depression time now. And if you could make enough to have board and room, you were doing pretty good.
Right.
And so anyway, I think Clifford maybe was just working at a soda fountain there in one of the drug stores or something like that, and he decided then to change over. So he went to work with Mr. Russell in that funeral home, and Mr. Russell taught him how to do the embalming and everything. But before we married, he took time out and went to school and got his certificate or whatever you would call it, mm-hmm. and came back and passed the state board. Mm-hmm. And then he could work anywhere in the state, and but we just stayed put.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty good county for me to work in. It wasn't so rough and all as it was over around Mountain Home.
Yeah.
I couldn't get out of that town without having to ferry a river, and the roads were pretty good in Clay County, and I liked the people, and they seemed to like me, and so time just passed.
So what made you decide to go back and get your master's degree?
Oh, I just always wanted it, mm-hmm. and well, they were kind of insisting that we all have master's degrees. And most of the home demonstration agents, most of the women who were working, had gone back and gotten their degrees, their master's. And so I went back just in the summers.
Okay.
And finished up. And I went out to Arizona, the University of Arizona, and one winter, and took I only did 3 hours work out there, but it was just a 3-week deal, and the rest of my work I did at the University of Arkansas then in the summers. 6 weeks, or I think one summer I went 9 weeks, I think,
so how did that work then? Did you get a leave of absence from your job, or were they, since they were requiring that you get this degree, were they willing to have you do that as part of your work day to take the classes, or?
I believe they did give us time. Now, I went one summer up to the University of Missouri, mm-hmm. and I had to use my annual leave for that. But I believe in the summers when I went over at the University of Arkansas, I believe they did give us time. Mm-hmm. I hadn't thought about that in so long, but I'm just not right sure. But I think they did.
Right.
Well, there's one more sort of a wrap-up question about Depression-era stuff. How do you think having lived through the Depression has changed who you are and affected who you are today?
Well, I don't know exactly whether it was the Depression or a combination of both, or whether it's in my genes. Mm-hmm. My great-grandmother was 3 years old when her family came to America from Germany. And they evidently were very frugal people, and very hard-working people. And they came to the United States and on to the mid-northern area in Missouri, mm-hmm. around Warrensburg up there. And they really progressed and they made a good living and they accumulated what they called wealth in those days. It might not be so much now, but they all had good farms and all. And this grandmother of mine seemed to be extra saving, had a nature to save things and keep things, and she seemed to have a knack of when she got a hold of something, she could hold on to it. And she did buy quite a bit of land. She owned quite a bit of land up there and had quite an estate when she passed away. And I'm a little bit turned that way. I don't spend a lot of money for things that I don't need and things that don't really satisfy. Mm-hmm. And I do seem to have that knack that she had of being able to hold on to things once I get it, mm-hmm. you know. So as I say, the Depression, we were so really poor. I don't think we had as much as welfare people have now. About the only comparison that I can think of. It was hard to own a car, an automobile, you know, to have that much money. And you surely didn't have enough money to take vacations mm-hmm. in the middle of the summer for 2 weeks or something. And while, as I say, we never did go hungry, and we never did go without warm clothing and good beds, and we never did without having wood to burn or coal, as the case might be. We always had plenty, but we didn't have any extra. Mm-hmm. And that has stayed with me. We didn't waste anything, and I still don't waste anything. I think maybe that the way I feel about Christian living has something to do with it too. I don't say very much about it to anybody, but I really don't feel like that people ought to spend money for really expensive things when a less expensive thing will serve just as well, mm-hmm. and they'll get them where they want to go. And, you can see where I'm living and what I have now. It isn't anything grand or expensive or anything. This carpet was in the house when I bought it 20 years ago.
But if it is suiting your needs, then that's fine.
That's the way I feel about it. Right. If it's comfortable and if it's a place where I'm good and warm in the winter and I'm cool in the summer and I have plenty to eat and plenty to wear, and a car that gets me where I want to go or need to go, which isn't very far nowadays. I don't see the point in spending money, and I do think that we do have an obligation to assist, I'm going to use the word society for lack of being able to think of a better word, but like the scholarship funds, mm-hmm. I really I don't feel obligated to do it, but I want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I think we ought to help one another. So maybe that answers your question. I don't know. We wouldn't have, I don't know how we'd have managed to have gotten to a high school. There was a high school at Sharon, which was about 5 miles from where we lived. The way you had to go was to crow, would fly about four probably. But we couldn't get that far, you know,
right.
With a horse and buggy for transportation, and that's all anyone had then. Getting an education was very important. And our scholarship in the College of Education over there is a memorial to our parents.
Oh, well, that's really nice. That must have made you feel really good that you could do something in their memory.
And what else did you ask? Something else that you said.
Oh, if you were just the first one.
Oh, yes, if I was the first one. Well, in my immediate family, of course I was. I have a cousin who's a little older than I.
Mm-hmm.
And she got her degree, of course, a little before I did. She, I never did know her. She and her parents lived in Washington State.
Okay.
Or Oregon, one or the other. They lived to both places. And she, her first degree was in music. Then she went to the University of Illinois, and her master's is in chemistry.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That is. And to somebody that could use her right brain and left brain, too. That's amazing.
Oh, I can't do that. I can't. I couldn't learn to type. I couldn't learn to play the piano. I can't do something with one hand and something else with the other hand at the same time. She has her degree, and she has a brother then, much 17 years younger than she was, that has a degree. And then another cousin that has a doctorate in psychology, I believe it is. Anyway, he worked at counseling work and that type of thing. Let's see, how many more do I have on Papa's side? I only have one first cousin once removed. It's my cousin's child that has a college degree, and I believe he's the only one in Papa's family that's any, you know, relation to me.
Mm-hmm.
My father was born in North Missouri, you know, where
so
the,
born near Warrensburg.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And when he was about, I think maybe like 12 years old, I think he maybe was in the fourth grade at school or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why Grandpa Hurd decided to move, but he came down in the southwest corner of Missouri, close to Joplin.
Mm-hmm.
And they were there a year or so. And now this was before 1889, because they were in Oklahoma territory by 1889.
Okay.
And he never did go back to school. Well, there wasn't any schools much to go to, but I'm pretty sure, being a boy, he didn't want to go to school, because I don't know very many boys that do want to go to school. And mother was born and reared in West Virginia, in Greenbrier County. I can't think of there's a town there, but then Hinton, West Virginia, that was not too far from where they lived. But they lived in the mountainous region down in there, kind of the northern tip of the Blue Ridge mountains in there. And she was 21 when they came to Oklahoma in 1908. Grandpa and the oldest boy of the family had come out here in 1907, along in the summertime, like July or August maybe. And then they wrote back for my grandmother, and this oldest son was married by that time, and his wife. So Grandma and Uncle Wayne's wife came all the way from West Virginia by themselves, and they'd never been anywhere.
Oh, my gosh. What an adventure.
I don't know how they ever maneuvered, but they got to Woodward.
Wow, and what a shock, too, to go from the lush sort of mountains of West Virginia out here.
But, you know, they said that had been a good year, and they'd had lots of moisture, and the crops were good.
So it looked pretty good out here.
And it wasn't so bad, you know. Well, the land hadn't been farmed and tilled, but just a very few years. So it looked good. So then, in the spring, Mama was 21, and then the brother that was just younger than she was now, and they were the two oldest ones, and then they had three younger brothers and a sister, and on top of that, then they had their grandparents, which would be my great-grandparents.
Wow.
And they were up in their 60s, but at 60 then, they were as old as I am at 92.
Right. Yeah.
See, I'm going to be 92 here in a few days. And but they were already old people then. Well, these two young kids, well, they were both 20. Mama was 21 and Uncle Cab was 22. And they had a sale and sold everything they had at an auction except what they were bringing with them.
Uh-huh.
And they could bring, I believe it was 100 or 150 pounds per ticket with them in the way of baggage, and I guess they did. And they packed up and brought things that weren't very important, I didn't think. And I've still got a few of them.
Oh, wonderful.
One of the funny little things that happened, this little girl, she was about 12, I guess, or 13, and she ripped her coat lining here, and then she poked all of her valuables in this coat. Can you imagine her?
Pretty good thinking, though, for a 12-year-old.
Yeah, but things, little keepsakes and little things that she treasured, she had them all in her coat. Oh, dear, that just tickles me nearly to death every time I think of it. But there they were, and on top of that, somewhere along the way, they got exposed to the measles.
Oh, no.
And they hadn't been here but, of course, about 2 weeks, a little less than 2 weeks still here. The whole bunch of them came down with measles, and they really had a time. Uncle Wayne lost their son, and then his wife had a miscarriage from it. And they lost Grandma and Grandpa. Their youngest one was only about 4 or 5 years old when they came out here. They lost him.
Mm-hmm. All to the measles.
All to the measles, from having those measles. So it was just really, really bad that first year that they were out here. But those younger children, Uncle Gus and Uncle Renz and Aunt Bird, three, they all finished the eighth grade out here in school. And Aunt Bird, of course, they didn't require so much of teachers, but she taught several years here in the schools. But she never did get a degree or anything, but she did go to what they called normal school,
right,
up at Alva a summer or two. And but we three and Rita, my cousin, and Kenneth, the cousin, and this first cousin once removed, his name is... Oh, I'm getting too many names now. It's getting twisted up in my head. Well, we called him L.D. His name was Lloyd Daniel, I believe. But he got a degree. They lived in Kansas, and he got a degree up there. And then I did have another uncle, Uncle Renzus, one of his boys, got a college degree. You can pretty nearly count them on your fingers how many people in my family have degrees. But I was one of the earliest ones, first ones.
What was your mother's family name? I don't think I asked you that.
Loudermilk, Louder Milk.
Okay.
And the first Loudermilks that came over here, their name was Loudermilch. Hmm. Loudermilch, something like that, Loudermilch. It was a German name, you see. And how it got to be Loudermilk, I don't know, but they say when those foreign people came through Ellis Island, that they just gave them a name. They couldn't tell. They couldn't tell what they were saying in their native language or what it meant or anything. So maybe there was something there. But anyway, in a couple of generations, it got down to Louder Milk. But there are one branch that spells it Laudermilk.
Yeah, okay.
But that's not the long family name, long-range family name, or whatever you'd call it. I've done a lot of work on our family. I know all my grandfather and my great-grandfather and my great-great and my great-great-great.
Yeah.
On back to about, I believe they were in Germany at 17 and something. Before the first ones came over, and there were just two Loudermilks came over.
I think there were some Loudermilks from in Shattuck. Is that part of your family?
Well, that might have been my Uncle Cab.
Yeah, huh?
Uh-huh. He married, let me see if I can get her name, Katie Peters.
Mm-hmm.
The Peters out there.
Oh my gosh.
That's David. Yeah, that's right. Someone that works in my office is from that Peters family.
Mm-hmm. Oh?
Yeah, so he was telling us all about that before Shelley made her first trip out to Shattuck.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I had no idea that was part of your family too.
Uh-huh. Well,
David will be excited. He might call you up. David is a real genealogist, so he may call you up and say, I'm coming to visit.
Well, if he wants to come, I'd be glad for him to come. Aunt Katie was a precious person.
Now, she wasn't the one with the millinery shop, was she? The Peters?
I think so. They had some kind of a... They had some kind of a store there, but I just thought it was kind of a general mercantile store. But back in those days, they did have somebody who could make hats and trim hats and do all that, you know. What I was going to say about Aunt Katie, she committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just heartbreaking.
Oh, yes.
But she was, we loved her.
According to stories that David has told, that she was quite attractive.
She was. She was just precious. We just liked her a whole lot. And she and Uncle Cab had two little boys. Albert and well, we called the other one Nick. I think his real name was Alfred, but Aunt Katie, she still talked a lot of the German language.
Uh-huh.
And when Nick was just a tiny baby, you know, she'd tickle him and talk to him, you know, and everything, and she'd call him Nick Nook. And we said, what does Nick Nook mean, Aunt Katie? And she says, well, it means something like no good.
That's funny.
Now you're no good.
Sounds like the perfect endearment for a little boy.
And then I didn't ever know Nick as well as I did Albert. And I wasn't at home then either. But this was back during the Depression when times are so hard. and Uncle Cab had taken Aunt Katie and the boys, and they had moved out to a farm down there by where I taught school. In that area, it was on a few miles south and maybe a little more east, and it was hard for Albert to even get started to school, so they brought him up and left him with Mama, and Mama would get him ready, and we had a school bus, not the nice kind they have now, but just a pickup truck with a thing built on the back, you know, and she'd send him to school, and so he went his first year of school, or most of his first year of school, out here at Tangier. And he was just a precious little boy. And Mama enjoyed having him so much. And really, we girls, you know, the nest had emptied.
Yeah.
And Mama was just there by herself all day long and all day long. And having Albert to get up and get him off to school. And then he'd come in the evening, you know, and everything. And she just really enjoyed having him. But the times was just awful hard on Aunt Katie. And living away out there in the country and nobody ever coming or going or anything. And she just got so depressed that she just couldn't stand it, I guess.
Well, your Uncle Cab, was he your mother's brother or your father's brother?
Mother.
Mother's brother, mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, he was Mama's brother.
So he was Cab Loudermilk?
Uh-huh.
Okay. We're going to have to report on this relationship exactly.
Well, let's see. What was Uncle Cab's name? DeCab. George.
Okay.
George DeCab was his name. Grandpa named all of the boys for somebody important. The first one was Pulaski Wayne.
Oh, my. That's quite a name.
Well, Pulaski and Wayne were both generals.
Right.
Uh-huh. The next one was George DeCab for George Washington, and DeCab was another general, I believe. Uh-huh. And then, who was next? The next one was Harrison. Let's see. Harrison, what was the rest of his name? Something Harrison. Maybe I'll think of it pretty soon. Well, Harrison was, wasn't he president?
Mm-hmm. Benjamin Harrison.
President Harrison. Okay. And then there was, what's the next boy? I guess it was Uncle Gus. We always kidded. We always had a lot of fun with him because the his name, or they said his name was Gustavus Adolphus.
Now you know why he went by Gus.
Yeah. Thaddeus. Thaddeus Gustavus Adolphus.
Oh, my word.
And so he left off the Adolphus, and then he just used the Gus part of... Thaddeus Augusta.
Sounds like a good decision.
Well, they were all different important people, you know. Then Jay Lorenzo. And Jay was for, well, you know, he was one of the founders. And
John Jay.
John Jay, yes.
Uh-huh.
And Lorenzo, who was he? Anyway, and then the little one that died was Curtis Oswald.
They were getting better towards the end.
Yeah. Well, Curtis was the the Oswald was the name of the doctor that took care of Grandma when she had the baby. And Curtis was for somebody, I don't know who in history, that Grandpa cooked up. But they only had three girls. They had more boys than they had girls. So the girls was Lillian Swan, and Mama's name was Mary Lou Zell. And then Aunt Bird was named for her grandmothers. Rebecca Bird.
Oh, okay.
So that takes care of the Loudermilk family. No, the Herd family is the they were all German. This great grandmother that I was telling you about, her name was Dierking, and there were a couple of the Dierking men that came over here from Germany, and they were here a couple of years or so, and one of them went back to Germany. And told the whole family, there was just an exodus of Dierkings that came to the United States.
How do you spell that last name?
I think it's D-I-E-R-K-I-N-G.
Okay, because my husband's mother's maiden name is Dierker.
Dierker.
Which is the same root, but E-R on the end.
Just lots of the family came, you know. So we have lots of Dierking relatives up there.